this will be take one, take one.
We will. We will rock you.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
In a world filled with chaos where the dreamers struggle to find their way, there is a light. In an industry riddled with sacrifice and self-doubt, there is a voice. At a time when we need one another more than ever, there is hope. Houston, we have a program.
And when
to another episode of Houston, exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. Vince, Mark, and I, sorry, Cracky, Mark, and I are very excited today because today's guest on Houston is multi-talented instrumentalist and composer, Rachel Flowers.
Hi.
Hi, Rachel. We're gonna tease people a little bit about you, and then we're gonna ask you like a million questions today. You cool with that?
Yep.
Sounds sweet. Good. You're so easygoing. I love it. Okay, so to give our audience who hasn't heard about Rachel Flowers, and I would suggest number one, getting out from under that rock, because Rachel is an amazing artist, and you got to get out there and check her out. She's got a couple albums out, another one on the way. Anyway, a little bit of a backstory on Rachel. Rachel lost her eyesight when she was an infant. When she was about 2 years old, in order to discourage her, as her mom says, from banging on their ancient piano with their toys, Rachel's mom taught her how to play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and Rachel picked it up immediately and was soon teaching herself every song out there. Everything she heard, she was learning. That's what her mom says anyway, and I believe it because I've seen her play. Rachel first gained recognition in the music community about her talent as a young child, and she has been admired and mentored by those at the top of the game in the music industry. Guys like Greg Lake, Keith Emerson, Dweezil Zappa, the conductor, and I don't know if I'm going to say his name right, but Terje Michelson?
I think it's Teddy A or something like that.
Teddy A. Michelson. Excellent.
Or Michelson. I have no idea how to pronounce it either. So.
Well, and I know that Michelson is Norwegian. So there you go. I do know that.
He's a conductor. So
he's a conductor.
His last album.
Nice.
The Three Fates Project, which had Mark Mania. And there was a video where on YouTube, when I was about 9 years old, I started listening to Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And then later on, I started to play their repertoire. And then I got this really cool video from Keith Emerson and Teddy. And at the time, they were finishing the Three Fates Project album. And it was pretty cool hearing Keith and Teddy talk about it. And then after Keith passed in 2016, I got to participate in two different tributes. The first one was in LA, I think.
Yeah.
And then rehearsals, and the second one was in Birmingham, England, the next year in 2016.
Nice.
Yep. And that was where I got to play the third movement of Keith's piano concerto, and Teddy conducted it. And it was pretty wild. So
yeah, what's wild is that you started learning. I mean, all that's wild, and it's fantastic. But it's amazing to me, going back to the beginning of your story there, is that you said you started listening to Emerson, Lake and Palmer at nine.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing. I mean, and it shows a lot in your playing. I mean, obviously you're a multi-instrumentalist, which we're going to get into today, but I also did some reading up on you and discovered that you've won a bunch of awards on piano and flute.
And flute, classical flute.
Wow.
Jazz piano and... Yeah. So
flute, guitar, bass, saxophone, Chapman stick, other instruments, and piano. And piano is still your favorite instrument out of all of them?
Yeah. It's still my favorite for composing. Like if I'm going to write music that's in the jazz classical approach, then it's piano. And then if it's guitar, I like to write rock inspired music. And for a while I was thinking that I was like the only one that could compose in different styles per instrument. And then just recently I started getting into the music of Todd Rundgren. That was pretty cool. It's like, wow, so there are some more people that can write in different styles in each instrument. So that's pretty cool.
Well, and they've obviously really influenced you, not only in your playing and your willingness to not accept mediocrity and be great, but also in your overall. I mean, there's a lot of those guys. I mean, some of these guys we mentioned, like obviously Greg Lake and Keith Emerson and Rundgren. I mean, yeah, these guys, I mean, it was just amazing. Yeah. And I've seen some of the different stuff you've done out there. Hey, just backing up for a second, because I know family is super important. How have you and your mom and brother been doing during this whole COVID crisis?
In the beginning, well, sometimes it's still kind of a challenge. I'm used to like going out with people and doing gigs, like jazz gigs and now it's like me being at home for all these few months. And sometimes I kind of switch time zones or in my head, it's weird. So
now obviously we're going to talk and we're going to get to hear some of your new music today.
But
I know you're working on a new album. Was this album this, and I believe it's your third album, correct?
Yeah, it's my third.
Was this album everything was pre-written before COVID, or was any of the music from this upcoming album inspired by the situation we all find ourselves in right now?
Well, the songs on the new album, a lot of them were pre-COVID. And then I've been going back and reworking most of the songs, which maybe like a few of the songs. So, but a lot of the songs that you're going to hear are going to be for another future project. Some of them will be on the new album. So.
Excellent. When your mom sent us those songs and she said that they were new, I sat there just for a second and I was like, I'm not trying to put you on here. We're all fans. And I was like, we get to hear new stuff. Ah, this is so great. this is great. I just kind of a side note. And I'm happy you guys are doing well. I know this is tough times for all of us. I know that we had originally talked about when I first met you was at this past NAMM show in Anaheim. And, it wasn't too soon after, immediately after I started doing more downloading, because I learned that you were much more than I thought you were. Meeting you in person, and you were so sweet and so kind to us, and funny too. So not too long after, I went out and bought your albums, Listen and Going Somewhere, and they get played on pretty regular rotation. I will be honest and say that I normally listen to more things like more rock, more Pink Floyd, Toto.
I love that stuff too.
Oh yeah. And I don't listen to jazz all the time, but I have found myself listening to your stuff and going, I like it, because I can't put my finger on it, but you're coming from a different place. You know, it seems like it's not just jazz. It's not just pop. It's, you can hear some of the other stuff coming up. Anyway, so kudos on those albums.
Thanks.
I got a quick question too. And on the albums too, don't, you know, pigeonhole her as just like jazz, because even within either of those single records, the diversity from song to song is so awesome. You know, a lot of times I hear something by an artist and you get the record and all the songs start to sound repetitive.
Sounds
like a lot of the same stuff over and over. But yeah, just from track to track on both those albums, it's pretty cool hearing the difference going through it. And just I don't know if you can tell me something, but I find the titles of the records too, Listen and Going Somewhere, pretty interesting. Can you talk about where those came from?
Mom and I, we came up with a lot of the titles for Listen, a lot of the song names, and so the jazz background. So for a while, I've been listening to a lot of classical and jazz when I was little. So along with the pop stuff that was taking place on the radio at the time, Mariah Carey, Lauryn Hill, LL Cool J, a lot of the hip hop stuff, my mom played me. I don't know if she played them for me, but I would listen to them and I just always loved them. They were like the solo albums of Sting and then Paula Cole. And then later on it was Joe Jackson. And then my grandma and grandpa, they played me like Western swing, I guess, bands. They had a little bit of jazz and blues in them, like Asleep at the Wheel, a couple of their live recordings especially. And then my dad played electric guitar and he played me a lot of guitar-driven stuff like Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, Eric Johnson, stuff like that. And then when I was about 8 or 9 or somewhere like that, that was when I started getting into jazz. And in my teens, I was really getting into Miles Davis and John Coltrane. And then when I was very little, I listened to the Pat Metheny Group. So a lot of that stuff was pretty cool. And then I went to this a couple different jazz programs. And that was like the start of me wanting to compose music in jazz, but I didn't want it to be just straight jazz where it was the same, like, here's the melody, now let's just improvise and back to the melody and that's it. But I wanted to go more in the direction of like what the Pat Metheny group was doing, and write music that had that jazz background, but it also had a bit of classical symphonic, almost like a cinematic film score kind of an approach to composition, and take it beyond just jazz. And I also learned that from listening to Frank Zappa's recordings. He would make these records where you'd have a song where one section is going to be like a doo-wop moment, and then maybe the next few minutes is going to be this experimentation freeform jam, and then you next couple of minutes it's going to be like a progressive odd time signature exploration. So it's a lot of fun combining styles and all that. And like the artists now that I really enjoy are like Jacob Collier and Esperanza Spalding. They're taking all these different influences and they're blending them together. Jacob Collier, for me, is he's introduced me to a lot of cool rhythms from different parts of the world. And then Esperanza, she's her first few albums were in like the traditional jazz approach, but they had some symphonic moments and some Brazilian influences. And then her most recent albums, it's very guitar driven. So you got this really cool, my brain thinks of it like if you can imagine King Crimson's crazy, excited guitar wildness, and then you blend it in with like the slow and beautiful melodic singing of like Joni Mitchell, kind of that mixture. And so that's pretty neat. So yeah.
And it's all those artists that you list. If there's anybody there listening who doesn't know your music and you like any of those artists, you're going to love Rachel's stuff. And if you don't know those artists, she just gave you a perfect list to increase your music education, because all those people are just incredible in their own way too. So great, great list. And yeah, you definitely have some great influences there.
Thanks. No, and then there's the Beatles too. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, those guys.
Yeah. They started out in the pop kind of an approach. They were really into all the R&B music that was going on, and then they were able to give it that rock twist and give it that sound. And then you get to like their last few or so albums, and they're already like exploring the Indian music. And then you got like that like symphonic stuff, and you get the way that they were using tape and all that exciting stuff. And so yeah.
Well, it's a very good point that Cracky brought up, and thank you for sharing all that with us. There is no way that you could be pigeonholed. You actually answered a couple of questions that we were going to ask you.
Oh, wow.
Just about getting inside your head with where the music comes from and why things are so different. Because of all the music that your grandparents, your parents, that have subjected you to, it's just all kind of. It's funny how that it comes inside and internalizes you. But with all that being said, so. Mm-hmm. I got as a one songwriter to another songwriter, when you're working on an album, do you actually cognizantly, as you're writing a song, will it ever occur to you, like as you're working on like maybe song track three, you're like, well, this bridge kind of sounds a little bit like track two. I better go in a different direction. Do you actually think about the differences on the songs that you're putting on an album, or do you just let them flow and what comes comes?
A lot of times I just let it flow. And then once all the songs are finalized and finished and go through them, and mom and I, we would go through like, okay, this song is a nice fast song, and let's put the slow song on here. And actually that's pretty interesting, because when we were working on Going Somewhere, there was this song that it wasn't fully finished yet, but lyrically it was pretty similar to like Waking Up in the Morning. We both thought that it would work more for another future project. So, it wasn't fully finished yet, but, so that's a lot of fun going through songs, and, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. If people only knew, behind the scenes of being a songwriter, right? And so that's one of the great things about you sharing what you're sharing today, because we understand talking to your mom, Jeannie, that you share a love of education. And that's, just so you know, that's one of the main things that we want to do on Houston, our podcast, is we want to give people the opportunity to feel like what it's like to sit in the same room as a rock star like yourself. No, seriously, you laugh because cool. You're sweet, but you are. I've seen you play. I've seen you get down. You hear your story, and not only does it give other artists hope, but here's another thing it does is it reminds upcoming artists and veterans that it takes work. It takes intention and
concentration.
And, you know, you answered Cracky's question, and then you just kind of aligned us a little bit here on this, on talking about your song process. You're smiling, you're chuckling, you've got to enjoy every step of the process, right?
Yep.
What does Rachel Flowers do when she hits a roadblock or she gets frustrated? Do you have some sort of a ritual? Do you go away and get a cup of coffee or go beat your brother or what do you do?
Sometimes get a snack, have some crackers and water or sometimes I like to watch movies to take a break from music. Watch movies with audio description.
Nice.
And then, yeah. So.
Is there no, wow. Speaking of education, I didn't know there was. If you don't mind, tell us about that. Yeah. Seriously. I'll shut up. Yeah. You tell us about these.
So for a while when most people with no vision, when they would watch a movie, they would have to ask a sighted person. So, okay, so what's going on in this part? And then the person might say, okay, the guy, I can't remember his name, but I think his name is Michael or Mikey. He's walking around and he's sitting at a table and gosh, I don't even know what he's doing. So when that descriptive audio came out, descriptive audio is where somebody would, they would look at the movie, and it doesn't matter what kind of a movie it is, any kind of movie, comedy or dark movies or whatever. And somebody would write a script on all the action that's going on in the screen, and they actually get all the characters' names. It'll be like, now, sitting in a front porch house, Mike stares at a couple boxes. With perplexed stare, he looks down, wearing a deeply troubled frown over his face. He stands closely to Jerry.
That almost, I don't know about you, and maybe you're too young for this, but you almost sounded like a female Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone there for a second.
Who's Rod Serling?
He is the host of the original Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone.
Yes.
That was so good, though. I think you could have a second career as doing the audio descriptions as well.
Now, right? That's fun.
If I can jump in, I got kind of a related question to that. I know you do a lot of live performances, and it includes jamming with other musicians. I'm not a musician. I own a guitar. I say wow. I own it. I don't necessarily play it, but it looks good sitting in my living room. But I'm a huge, huge music fan, so I go to a lot of shows. Yeah. And I noticed a lot of times on stage, especially in some of the styles of music that you enjoy, that visual cues are important to the band sometimes when they're jamming on stage. How do you get around that challenge? Is it something that you discuss more in advance or have to rehearse more? Or is it more vocal?
A lot of it, that's pretty interesting because when I listen to live recordings, for example, I listened to a Joe Jackson live record and his band would be jamming on a section of a song. And then he'd go, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, right now. And he'll do like a count off. And that's the cue for the whole band to go, all right, final verse, here we go. You know, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Okay. So it's more vocal.
The vocal. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Or other times it just comes from, like when I would listen to I've been getting into just listening to the music of Daryl Hall and John Oates. And sometimes I would check out the live from Daryl's house in a different series. When I was listening to it on, I think YouTube or something like that, it was, there would be like some points of a song, there'll be like a vocal cue, bring it down now.
Yeah. See, you're making Cracky, See, Cracky, mm-hmm. now when you go to these shows, you know what? Seriously, close your eyes and listen and see if you can hear what Rachel's talking about. Rachel just gave me an idea, though. Instead of opening the show today with her song With You, we should just start it out with all three of us going, whoa, here she comes.
I don't think you want to hear me on that, though. Yeah.
All right. Well, and speaking, Rachel, today we started the show with your song, with your new song, With You. Nice. Tell us about this song.
Yeah, this is actually, this is one of my favorite songs that I've written for a while. I was getting into a John Mayer phase, and I like to focus on the music side of him in terms of just the diversity. When you listen to his songs, they're not just rock or whatever influence. There is a hint of like these really cool, like almost jazzy chord twists going on in his songs. Song like Gravity or the stuff on his first album. Is that one about Why Georgia Why or something like that? I think is what it's called.
I can't remember the name. I have all his albums too. I love John Mayer. My favorite one is my favorite album of his is Continuum, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. But Gravity is a gorgeous song.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites.
And complex in its simplicity.
Yeah, so cool. And my favorite version is the live recording from Where the Light Is, which is also a lyric from the song. And that's another of my favorite live recordings, because just the dynamics from the different bands that he's in on that recording, and just listening to the musical cues. And, you know, if you listen to like Out of My Mind, the dynamics when he brings the band down during the jam, it isn't vocal, but you just know from the playing, they're going,
yeah. Well, I mean, how else would some of the, because, you know, back to Vince or Cracky's question about, you know, not being able to see visual cues, when some of these big bands like John Mayer, we interviewed his lead guitarist, Zane Carvey, a few years ago, and they're on a huge stage. So they may be able to see their eyesight, they have their eyesight, but when they're that far away from each other, they also have to be able to depend on those auditory cues as well.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful that you brought that to our attention. I think everyone who listens to this interview is going to listen to things a little bit differently.
Yeah, in another perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so thank you for sharing With You with us. That's your favorite song. That's good to know.
Yeah, and also I wrote that song I was really writing it for my mom. When I'm shaking from the wind, you bring me gloves to warm my hands.
Oh. Rachel Flowers is a schmoopy too. No, it's you know what? That is so sweet. Coordinating this interview and stuff, and getting to talk to your mom and stuff. She really is a sweetheart. She's a very nice lady, and she's your biggest fan. I can tell. She's just so excited. And by the way, she's definitely a watchdog for you, because she asked questions and she did all of her homework. So, well, beautiful. Speaking of songs, how about we listen to another one of your songs, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more?
Yeah, cool.
Cool. All right. So thank you for tuning in today to Houston, exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. I am your host, Raymond Hayden, and my distinguished co-host, Mr.
Cracky Mule Train.
Right. We're both sitting back here with the lovely Rachel Flowers. Right now, we're going to play a song of hers, brand new. It's called Symphonic Thought. And we'll be right back right after that. Thank you.
Hey, this is Travis Larson, and you're listening to Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. By the way, the music is provided by Travis Larson Band, oddly enough.
And we are back. Rachel?
Hi.
You've got to tell us about that song, because that's unlike anything. I mean, that was a symphony. I mean, did you write, number one, beautiful song. Did you write all the parts?
Yes. A lot of the orchestration stuff that I do, I play them, I play it completely live on the keyboard. And I use these really amazing orchestral libraries. I'm very happy to be at a time now in technology where sampling has gone beyond just maybe sampling 8 seconds of a note on the Mellotron, which has its historical importance. And now we have these amazing orchestral sample libraries and different ways of making the realism of a live symphony orchestra.
It's amazing. Amazing. I thought it. I mean, I've been a musician my whole life, and I've got an ear, and I was listening, and I was like, no, those are real instruments. It's just, there's also, no matter how good the samples are, Rachel, I mean, mm-hmm. you obviously have to have finesse, because every instrument mm-hmm. has different articulations and stuff. And yep. that's where you being a multi-instrumentalist, I think, really comes in handy, right?
Yeah, it comes in pretty well just like that. Plus, when I was little, I listened to a whole bunch of classical recordings. I would listen to maybe two or three different versions of Ravel's Bolero. One version is going to be faster. One's going to be slower. One might have more echo in the room. One might have less echo. And flute player might play with a faster vibrato, or maybe the trumpet player is going to play with more of a jazzy edge, or maybe the trombones are going to be further apart in the distance, or they're going to be closer. And just hearing the nuance of instrument to instrument and the frequencies, it's pretty cool.
Well, you did. It's a brilliant piece. And Cracky, why don't you tell her during our pre-show, before we got you in here into the green room, as we like to call it. but before that, we were talking, and Cracky, why don't you tell Rachel what you were talking about the imagery and stuff that when you were listening to the song?
Yeah, what we were talking is particularly that one, which mm-hmm. thank you for sharing. It's so cool to hear that first before anybody else. It's almost like a soundtrack to a movie. Like I could mm-hmm. totally hear that being part of this epic scene in a movie. And Ray and I were talking about that, how music can really influence the feel mm-hmm. and how a movie scene is perceived. And he came up with a really good word. It really helps you visualize these images just coming from the music.
Oh, yeah.
Music alone. So, and I know Ray's got a friend that does soundtrack music. So we were talking about really how it can really inspire you just the instrumental music alone like that. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We actually came up with, Crack and I, we came up with an idea, and we said, we basically said, okay, if she's really cool during the interview, we're going to give it away. So we're going to give you this idea for free. So, mm-hmm. Of course we're messing around, of course, but this is a, but we did come up with this idea, and it was like, I have always, okay. Cause you know how it works. So the director, the actors, you know, they get their scripts, they practice their scripts, they put it all together, they have graphics, mm-hmm. and then the music supervisor gets the last shot at it, right? Here's the feel we want. You know, they get like 24 hours to come up with the music. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's been done, but I've not heard about it. Is how cool would it be, Rachel, if mm-hmm. an artist wrote music and then gave it to a director and said, okay, build the film around this?
That'd be pretty cool.
And like to see what would come up, right? And so, like mm-hmm. for example, let's say you wrote this. Let's say you wrote like for example, Symphonic Thought, and you gave mm-hmm. it to a director, and you said, "Okay, here you go." The trick is you don't tell him anything. You don't tell him what you were thinking. You don't tell him what your inspiration was. You just mm-hmm. give it to him. You let him interpret. Wouldn't that be cool though? To kind of see that.
That would be so cool.
That is your idea. Yeah. So if we ever see it come to fruition, then we know that we're like, she liked our idea.
That piece was also written at the time I was checking out this Leonard Bernstein lecture called The Unanswered Question, which was named after a Charles Ives piece. Oh. And I was listening to that piece and hearing the strings play these spread out chords with like very little vibrato, and just that sound is just pretty wild. And then at the end of the lecture, he played the last movement of Mahler's Ninth Symphony, which is like pretty powerful. So it was a combination of listening to those two different things. And then that night I opened up this template, which had all these orchestral sounds from the Vienna Symphonic Library. So those were the sounds that I used for symphonic thought. And I did it all like one night. So, yeah.
You just cease to amaze us. It's just, I would love to get a snapshot inside your mind. Cause what a beautiful place. I mean, there's over in one, on one stage is a jazz band, another stage, some cats playing Tarkus. Anyway, no, very, very beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah. There's so many facets to you, even doing the research and looking at, you know, all the different social media and website, this and that. Speaking of, let's give you some props. Where can people find out about you? What's the best places people can find your music, find your videos, etc.?
RachelFlowersMusic.com.
Cool. We'll make sure we put a link. Cool. Also,
yeah, our Facebook page is a good one. Rachel Flowers Music on Facebook.
Okay, excellent. We'll make sure that we post that in the. We already have at one point, but we'll do it again. We'll go ahead and post it on there. Before the interview and after the interview as well. But cool. Very cool. So this wasn't a question that I was going to ask, but because I just brought the name up, I'm just curious. Is there a let's share a secret with your fans today. Ooh, what is the most challenging piece of music that you've ever learned? Not written, but learned, because you've learned some from some of the greats. What's the most challenging piece and why?
That I've learned?
Yes.
There's the High Level Fugue from Five Bridges Suite by the Nice, which was Keith Emerson's group before Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and the Endless Enigma Fugue from the Trilogy album. Those two are the wildest, craziest, multi-voiced piano pieces.
And you had to memorize them.
Yeah, and it was pretty interesting because the Endless Enigma, that fugue was on the recording, the bass, on the frequencies of the bass are very close to the piano frequencies, that I had to find a way with my headphones to only allow the stereo side to play instead of the mono side. So I had to put my headphones a certain way so I could only get the stereo stuff, and I was able to hear the left-hand lines more, because the bass frequencies are so strong on that recording that it's kind of hard to hear it, you know. And then with the Five Bridges Suite, they recorded that a couple of times. The first recording is a live version, which it actually came from a couple of different performances. Most of it came from a performance that had the symphony orchestra. But other sections, like the trio section, were recorded at the Fillmore. And I figured that out because I got this recording called Live at the Fillmore East, December 1969. And if you listen very closely to the band section in the Five Bridges Suite, and then the last few minutes or so of Country Pie when the drum break kicks in, that's coming from that particular Fillmore recording. So on the Five Bridges album, they actually did a lot of highlights from whatever concert they were, even if the drums sounded different. And the production probably sounded a bit different. And then also another note on the Five Bridges album, when they digitally released it, I guess, for some reason, the track listing of the suite isn't really that accurate. So it is confusing, I think. So it just takes listening and going, okay, so the first two songs are actually the first bridge. And then the track that says High Level Fugue, that's actually supposed to be the second bridge, and that's the band section. And then the last track, which set it says the finale, but it's actually the chorale and then the fugue and then the final sections.
So it's not like the pieces themselves aren't difficult. You've got to deal with all these obstacles that are put in your way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of musician friends of mine that reached out and they asked me to ask you if you would maybe talk a little about your process about when you learn one of those pieces, what does that look like? How does Rachel Flower sit down and learn a song like that? Or is it different every time?
It depends on how simple or how complex it is. If it's very complex, like the Five Bridges Suites or the Endless Enigma or whatever, I would listen to a section by section. I would rewind that particular section and listen to it, maybe slow it down, even if the sound quality is not that great. And I would speed it back up to normal. And I would just focus on that particular section. Okay, this is what the left hand is doing, and this is what the right hand's doing there, and work on that section few times. And sometimes when I get to the third day of learning it, that's where the whole memorization starts to take shape for most of the time. So
sure. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'll make sure that mm-hmm. I reach out to those musicians and tell them to go buy some stuff from you because we use their questions.
Mm-hmm, cool.
Let's take a break for a second. And we're not going to keep you too much longer because we know you have you have other things you got to do. You got this album you got to finish, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to have a little fun, and this is what we like to call the lightning fast get to know our guest round. And you mm-hmm. now here's the thing: you're talking about all this thinking about how you learn songs. You have to shut your brain off. No thinking. You just have to answer the questions right off the bat.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
Sounds good.
But before we do this. I just want to clear up something because here I am talking about how great a musician you are and how sweet you were when I met you in person. But then I found out something very, very disturbing, Rachel.
What is
and
that?
I want to make sure that it's not true. That okay. is your mom said, and I quote, Rachel does not like chocolate.
That's
and
true.
What?
Yeah, I'm not a chocolate person.
And we were getting along so well.
Uh-huh.
All right. All right.
Hey, Ray. Ray, yeah. though, that just means more chocolate for you and me, Ray.
That's true. Okay. All right. See, Rachel, this is why I keep Cracky around, because he's there to remind me of stuff. Okay, here we go. And we're going to go with the lightning fast get to know our guest round on Houston. It's corny as heck, but it's fun. All right. And besides people finding out, they got to find out some fun stuff about you that's not all about how many hours you take at working at being a badass. Okay, you ready? And favorite color?
Zero.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is I was not going to ask that question, but then when you started talking about the film thing where the guys describe things, I thought, I wonder if they describe color. Do they ever do that?
Sometimes it's pretty interesting. I think of it more like emotions. Like when I say blue, that's kind of like sad. Ah. When I say like, in a black background or fade to black or.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, so then yeah. I guess the right way to ask that question because of that would be favorite emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. So. All right. What's your favorite movie that you have described to us so earlier that you've been able to watch and listen to via the narration?
Oh man, there's a whole bunch. Groundhog Day.
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I love. Oh, just kidding. Okay, sorry.
Hey, Phil!
Oh gosh! Exactly. He saw a shadow. All right. favorite food. You said we already know you like snacks, but what's your favorite food? What's your go-to?
Grilled chicken.
Ooh, yummy! My roommate makes very good grilled chicken. All right. Favorite thing to do when you're not doing music?
Bowling.
Bowling?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And that doesn't hurt your wrist at all?
No, I feel the ball with the holes, and then I just listen and try to spatialize where to do the whatever it is. I just hear the sound.
Nice.
And then another thing is deep sea fishing.
Wow. Deep sea fishing? Well, mm-hmm. Talk about, okay, I know this is supposed to be the lightning fast round, but you're answering these questions too cool. Deep sea fishing. Like, for what kind of fish?
I don't know. Just being on the boat, feeling
the motion stuff.
Yeah, just feeling the catching the fish. One time I caught 3 fish. So.
Yeah, Cracky. I bet you'd like to say that.
Yeah, I like going on the boat, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't say I've ever really reeled anything in. So she's up fine. On me 3-0 on that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Okay. Do you have a favorite fan moment? And that
fan
could be
moment?
Yeah, that could be a good, sweet moment, or it could be a crazy moment. Do you have a fan moment?
Oh. Whose dog is that?
Yeah, that was my dog, Jon Snow.
the dog did a little improv moment right there.
He did. He was like, "Whoa." Yeah, he's a German Shepherd Lab, and he's just a gorgeous. He's just a people lover. And during our rehearsals, he sits right in the middle. He sits right in the middle of the room.
I think he was just letting her know that he's a fan.
He is a fan. Yes.
That's
but
cool.
Anyway, so back to that. But do you have any favorite fan moments?
Oh, like fans of mine, kind of a thing, or
yes,
just...
yes.
Anything
that stands out in your mind?
I don't really know. I haven't really thought of anything on that.
No problem. That's okay. That's a tough mm-hmm. question. Okay. The final question in this not so lightning fast question. So what would surprise, and you've told us a lot of things today that I think are really going to really give people into the young woman artist that you are. But what would surprise people that are listening to the show today about you? Is there something else besides all the music you listen to and do? The fact that you don't like chocolate turkey, or that you like to bowl. What else? Is there something else that would surprise people, I think?
I don't really know.
Well, if you can think of something later, okay. I mean, you know, you don't use your brother for skeet shooting or anything like that. So,
no.
Okay, good. Excellent. So, earlier we talked about, I, your mom had told me that this is something that was important to you. We talked about education. So, you've given us so much time today. We want to let you go and get back to your day. But if there was any advice based on, you know, that you've taken in based on all the stuff that you've done in your life so far, any advice to upcoming musicians or veteran artists out there that are maybe jaded, losing hope, anyone out there who is being an artist, do you have any advice? Something that maybe keeps you going or anything that you'd love to educate your fellow artists out there?
Oh, wow. I think keep learning. Maybe if there's something that's probably affecting you or something, if you want to write about it in lyrics or you want to express it in a musical way, and regardless of the style or how words are used or whatever, it's I think it's pretty much just about exploring things. And if you're stuck on an idea, you can probably come back to it. Or if you want to write complex music, and maybe you could find some music that's in that approach, or maybe sometimes I like to randomly go through videos on YouTube by certain people who are like educators and musicians, and I learn a lot from there. And people on YouTube like Adam Neely, who's a bassist and music theory person, and then there's David Bruce, who's a classical composer. But he did this really cool challenge of taking a theme or famous themes and getting 5 different composers. He's actually one of them, but giving this concept to 4 people from different musical backgrounds. It could be a classical background or an electronic background, and just taking that concept and giving it whatever twist they want to bring to it. Or even start exploring music. Maybe it could be something that you like. Something that Jacob Collier said is pretty cool is that if there's an idea that you have, and if you're someone who maybe you're thinking about the idea and you don't know if it's going to work, just try it out. And at the end of it, if you like the idea, you keep it in. And if you don't like the idea, you swap it for something else and just explore it. And that's one thing I could think about.
And something we didn't mention, we've talked a lot about her proficiency on so many instruments. We haven't talked a lot about her vocals, too. She is a great singer. She's got some vocal talent, too. And it just, especially some of those on her records, you can definitely hear it. That second record, because Listen's all instrumental, right?
Yeah, it's got some vocals. They're more like wordless background vocals, like Pat Metheny group Esperanza a little bit.
The vocals and lyrics on Going Somewhere also very good. And you can't see the joy in her face. I'm sure you can hear it in her voice during this podcast. But if you question it at all, go to her YouTube channel, Rachel Flowers Music. She's got a bunch of videos there, and you can definitely see it in her face as well there. And J.P. Collier, man, these are rough times lately, but if you need a pickup, go listen to his NPR Tiny Desk concert.
Oh, yeah, and he's like amazing. One of my favorite. I learned a lot from him. And just like me, his mother was also a musician, and they've collaborated on together on a song. And we both work at our home studios in our rooms and both use technology and both grew up on very similar musical backgrounds. It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, no. That's very cool. I had no idea. And Cracky, thank you for mentioning. Yeah, there is so much that we've learned today from you, Rachel, and so much more to learn. And that's why we want to really encourage people who are listening to go out to your website and your Facebook page and all that and listen to that. And by the way, that was probably one of the best answers I've ever got from that question, because we always ask people what advice is. And you basically didn't give an answer. What you gave was I'm going to call it Rachel Flowers 101. Because it was beautiful. At the end of the day,
you
wrapping it all up in a tiny little bow. You said, "Hey, you know what? Have some fun, work, keep exploring, listen, and why not try something? If it works, great. If it doesn't work, try something else." I mean, you didn't say it like that, but that's what I got out of what you're saying.
Concept.
So powerful.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we want to keep you forever, but we don't want to take too much time here. So what we're gonna do is we are going to say thank you very much, Rachel, for spending time. We hope you had as much fun as we did.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Like to do it again.
Oh, yay. Well, hold on. Write that down, Mark. You know what? Thank you. Because, our next email was going to be, hey, when your album kicks, would you do us the honor of letting us have you on again? And because we've already got to know you, we'll just focus on that album. But
That album's going to focus on more of a kind of a progressive rock direction. It'll still have some classical background. It will have vocals. It's going to be more guitar driven, and there will be some piano moments. But I wanted to focus on some more rock inspired stuff while keeping the jazz background and classical background. Yeah. So, and taking cues from other favorite rock groups. Or not just rock, but like bands that do everything, like Ambrosia, the early days of Ambrosia, like Somewhere I've Never Traveled, especially that album.
Oh, wow.
Listening a little bit to the Alan Parsons Project, listening to a little bit of, contemporaries, Sarah McLachlan, Paula Cole, and stuff that just like Stephen Wilson, a little bit of I love Pink Floyd, Porcupine Tree, Spock's Beard. That's like one of my, those are like my favorite contemporary sort of progressive rock kind of groups. But I wanted to give it more of a female twist, because in progressive rock, there's some really, really, really cool bands that have some amazing people in them. And sometimes on a conceptual, most conceptual albums, there'll be a female character, but they're not sung by the female. They're just singing wordless vocals, and we achieved that so well with Pink Floyd on Great Gig in the Sky, probably one of the important wordless female vocal, soulful, emotional pieces in that repertoire. And I would like to expand and let the females take on the role of not just in the classical approach, but I'm lately getting into Mary J. Blige, Alicia Keys, and listening to Aretha Franklin, a little bit of Chaka Khan, a little bit of, I've been getting into the bands Hiatus Coyote. They're like this really cool jazzy hip hop kind of a mixture, and they got these really cool female vocals. And so I like to, and even the jazz of Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, listening to stuff from different time periods and the way that they sing and vibrato. And just like, I'm just having a lot of fun getting into all these different genres. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
Well, we would love the opportunity to talk to you about it when it comes out. And you've just done a very good job of teasing us as well as everybody else. By the way, Pink Floyd is one of my favorite bands too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but so we're going to hold you to that for sure.
Cool.
So last thing we're going to do today, before we let you, and then we'll let you go so you can go do your thing, is we are going to listen to one final song. This song is called When Everything Goes Around. Mm-hmm. And I just want to take a second to thank everybody for listening to Houston on exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. And Rachel, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the last word. Why don't you go ahead and just give us the bullet points of this song? And then we're going to play it for the people, and then we'll talk to you down the road again. We're going to hold you to it.
Yeah, cool. This is actually a song that I wrote during the start of the COVID thing. And for a while, I didn't really do much for the first few days. I just will for the first few weeks or so. And then I listened to a Jacob Collier thing, and that got my interest in getting back to working. And then I listened to the music of Joe Jackson, and I listened to an interview that he did in Germany, and he talked about Beethoven, and I'm like, no wonder he loves those octaves. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back, listen to some Beethoven, listen to one of his piano sonatas. And then the next thing I know, I just started composing this song, and I was thinking of Joe Jackson, Bruce Hornsby, Beethoven, and Pat Metheny, and just a little bit of everything in between. And then the lyrics I just wrote on my phone as a note, and I wanted to write something. Most songs, the vocals would take the spotlight, and then the bridge, you'd have an instrumental passage. And I wanted to write something where it would be the complete opposite. The piano is going to be the spotlight lead instrument, taking on the role of like vocals. And then the vocals are going to sing lyrics for the bridge and the outro of the song as if they're like a soloist. So it was a lot of fun to do. So I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, this has been a lot of fun, and I'd love to do this again. So yeah.
Rachel, thank you so much again. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you for tuning in to Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. Keep an eye out for our next mission where we interview and unveil behind-the-scenes aspects of some of your favorite artists. Houston, Seattle Wave Radio base here. Our podcast has landed.
Jam.